Welcome back to Quick Bits. This week is probably going to be a little bit of a longer Quick Bits because we have some new information that dropped late on Friday with regard to the Hannah Gutierrez sentencing. But we also need to cover P. Diddy and his son being sued again and controversy over the plaintiff's attorney, a extensive hearing in the Idaho University murders with regard to the defendant's questionnaire to potential jurors in support of their motion to change venue. Plus, Rust got real spicy this week. The prosecution brought the smoke for both Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez. Oh, and as to Gutierrez, disclosed a whole bunch of the conversations she's been having in jail calls since she was taken into custody after she was found guilty. So let's get into it. I'm legal analyst Emily D. Baker. This is the Quick Bits, where I break down just the main points of the pop culture and entertainment cases I'm currently covering on YouTube and the Emily Show podcast. Let's get into it. First, let's talk about what's coming up this week. As always, Quick Bits drops on Monday, and there's a lot going on this week of April 15th, 2024. Not only is it tax day, which, you know, where my extension crew at? I got you. But I am streaming on Monday at 11 a.m. Central Time for the sentencing of Hannah Gutierrez. That will be in court, and I expect it to include some victim impact statements, a statement from the defendant given what she's been saying in her jail calls, and more. We'll see if the defendant's mother is allowed into court. She was kicked out of court at the end of the verdict being read and Hannah being taken into custody, and that's been discussed on jail calls too. Tuesday, there is a hearing in Idaho on the TikTok psychic case and the motions for summary judgment. That is not a hearing that will be streamed, but I will be summarizing that hearing during Tuesday's live stream. The time is going to depend on when that hearing ends, so you're going to need the Lawnert app to stay in touch with when I'm going to be streaming on Tuesday because we are going to be waiting, but I will be in the chat while the hearing is going on. And on Tuesday, the Karen Reed jury selection begins. That trial will start either this week or early next week, depending on how long jury selection starts. It seems the judge is going to voir dire each juror individually, so that could take a number of days. Again, Lawnert app will get you there. If you're like, Karen Reed, what is that case? It's a homicide case out of Massachusetts, and I will be breaking it down on this week's Emily Show podcast, so you're ready for trial to start. The rest of the week is going to be kind of TBD, depending on that jury selection, because once we get into opening statements, we're back in trial. So final plug. Go to the App Store, type in Lawnert, and it will get you there so that you stay in the loop. Let's talk about Diddy and his son. Diddy and his son were sued in another lawsuit, and this lawsuit all comes out of allegations stemming from the yacht trip that we saw referred to in the Little Rod lawsuit that I covered 2 weeks ago, and that was covered in detail on the Emily Show podcast. The plaintiff's lawyer for Little Rod and for this plaintiff is the same attorney. And the attorneys in the Little Rod lawsuit for UMG and the UMG defendants have been going after that lawyer fairly hard because the lawyer is also being brought up to the New York Federal District Court Disciplinary Committee regarding filing in public court, where the court has said there seems to be a pattern of this plaintiff's attorney filing cases with salacious allegations in the wrong jurisdiction, so they will get picked up by the media. And one of the defense attorneys on a case where this lawyer was the plaintiff's attorney said that the lawyer told them that the reason they file it in federal court is so it will be quickly picked up by the media. The court is not thrilled with that, so there will be a hearing to determine what is going on there. But none of the cases in that court order are the Diddy cases or related to the Diddy cases. And that lawyer has struck back saying, I have not been sanctioned. I have not been fined. I intend to go to the disciplinary committee and have my day in court. And it has nothing to do with all of these Diddy lawsuits. So that is also ongoing. What is also ongoing is these extensive hearings in Idaho. We're in part two of the Idaho hearings with regard to the defense using questionnaires to try to ascertain whether or not the potential jury pool in various counties, including Latah County in Idaho, are potentially biased against the defendant. We learned the questions in that questionnaire at a previous hearing where the prosecution just read them all into the record. So the shit is absolutely out of the horse with that, including questions that are grounded in the probable cause affidavit, but also questions grounded in media speculation and other speculation that are proven that all sides agree are false, including whether or not Brian Koberger stalked one of the victims or followed one of the victims on social media. That is not in court records anywhere. Before we even got into the extensive hearing that started at 4 p.m. Pacific time, the court again argued with the lawyers about whether a hearing with the expert needed to happen, even though that's what they were all there for. The attorneys both came in frustrated. And then when the expert witness for the defense took the stand, it was clear he was frustrated. And towards the end of his testimony, we understood why. He talked about media coverage of the last hearing, impugning his business, his character, his reputation, implying that these surveys were improper, that the questions were improper. Again, the prosecution's never argued that. The prosecution in Idaho has questioned whether or not the surveys violate the non-dissemination order. Not that surveys can't be done, not that surveys can't be done this way, but whether those specific questions violate the non-dissemination order. And the court has not ruled about that yet. The court has taken everything under submission. Again, Judge Judge also questioned the expert and asked if there's a way to, in the kind of preamble to the questions, say that not all these questions are fact-based, because Judge Judge is also worried that if the jury pool wasn't biased before, the questions might bias them now. The expert struck back at that, saying, well, we're only getting to these specific fact questions with individuals that have already heard about the case. And if one individual hears more about the case than they might have otherwise, then isn't that a risk we're willing to take versus trying Brian Koberger in a community that cannot be fair to him? But the expert got very feisty. Both attorneys were fiery. At one point, the prosecution, as the judge was saying, you'll have a chance to be heard about all of this, the prosecution literally said, not today, judge. And I am not exaggerating with my tone, because the judge was talking about the motion for change of venue. The prosecution has long argued that the change of venue motion is premature, that we are too far out from a trial date that's not been set yet to even hear this. With the amount of control that Judge Judge wants over these proceedings, it's clear that this is going to take a very long time to get to trial when there are multiple hearings needed to get to a ruling on anything. I can see why the attorneys on both sides are frustrated. And that hearing for change of venue was supposed to be in May, but the defense will need time if they're allowed to continue with the surveys. And the surveyor said they can't really give complete detail on where the trial could go if they're not allowed to complete their surveys. They can say Latah County is not the place, but they can't determine where might be the place without looking for other communities to see what they know about this trial. Though a year from now, are the jury pools completely different? Do people move in and out? Do people turn 18? Do people fall off the jury roll? And that's a real question too, when you have such a long period of time between now and when this trial might start in the summer of 2025. And with everything going on in this case, honestly, I'm not optimistic that summer 2025 is even going to happen. In the Rust cases, Alec Baldwin had filed a motion to dismiss the indictment and had pulled up the entire history of the case, some of which we had not seen before because it was dealing with litigation before the new indictment. Some of it was a motion for sanctions against the prosecutors that had not been on the publicly available docket. So we learned quite a lot from that 300-page motion. Well, the prosecution responded in kind, almost 300 pages. Tons of shade, their response to the motion for sanctions, and more. The prosecution also argued that the defense's motion painted an incomplete record of what happened at the grand jury, including the fact that the documents that the defense wanted submitted to the grand jury were available in banker's boxes at the grand jury. The prosecution made clear how the judge lays out the rule of the grand jury and lets the jurors know that they can call witnesses, subpoena records, subpoena documents, most of the things the defense complained about. The prosecution also took every opportunity to snap at the defense being ignorant of the law, being New York lawyers, and a little opportunity to snap at Baldwin, which we're going to take a look at right now. The state started their motion with, quote, "The defendant's motion to dismiss is a predictably false, misleading, and histrionic misrepresentation of the facts and circumstances of the history of the case. The two special prosecutors who have been assigned the prosecution of Mr. Baldwin have experienced near countless lies and manipulation from the defense for more than 1 year. In addition, we have and certainly will continue to be the subject of the defendant's contrived and unwarranted personal attacks." The prosecution goes on in their attached response to the motion for sanctions to say, quote, defense counsel has expressed concerns over the statements in both articles related to prior instances where Mr. Baldwin has run afoul of the law and assertions that the prosecutors believe him arrogant and that the prosecution is simply an attempt at humbling Mr. Baldwin. Charges against Mr. Baldwin are not being pursued because of his criminal history, his impressive level of arrogance, or to teach him a lesson. State's counsel did not anticipate refiling charges against Mr. Baldwin after the nolle prosequi, the non-prosecution, was filed in April 2023. Counsel's intention was to complete the investigation and make a sound and reasonable charging decision in a case where a human life was lost. The loss of human life necessitated that a full, detailed investigation be completed. The evidence that came to light during the course of the investigation made clear that a probable cause determination must be formally made as inculpatory information has been discovered concerning Mr. Baldwin's conduct on the set of Rust that is relevant to the charge of involuntary manslaughter. The prosecution also pointed out that the reason Baldwin's plea deal was revoked early is because they learned he was pursuing a documentary about what happened on the set of Rust, returning to the set of Rust, and that offended their senses clearly based on how they talked about it in their writing. The prosecution also made clear that the reason they pursued the nolle prosequi or the nol pros was because Baldwin's lawyer said, hey, we're going to spend over six figures for this prelim. Why don't we dismiss it, figure out what's going on? And the state said that they did that in good faith based on the defense representation about the operation of the weapon. But then when the state got all the weapon reports back, it was clear that the weapon would not have fired without Baldwin holding down the trigger, and that in statements Baldwin gave in interviews, it was clear that he had his finger on the trigger by the way he described what happened. This trial is starting in July and it is going to be feisty. Again, if you want to stay in the loop with Rust, lawnerdapp.com. Am I going to tell you about it this entire episode? Yes. Yes, I am. Because some of you don't have it yet. Not many of you, but some of you don't. And finally, the sentencing of Hannah Gutierrez. There is new information to cover because it came out after all of my streaming coverage was done from last week, so we're going to be covering it now. The defense asked that Hannah receive a conditional discharge, and when I did the first look on stream on Thursday, I was unclear about whether you even could have a conditional discharge after a jury conviction. A conditional discharge in New Mexico means, and this is coming from New Mexico Statute 31-2013, and it allows that when a person who has not been previously convicted of a felony offense is found guilty of a crime for which a deferred or suspended sentence is authorized, the court may, without entering an adjudication of guilt, enter a conditional discharge order and place the person on probation on terms and conditions, and a conditional discharge order may only be made once. Now, a deferred or suspended sentence means that you can do probation, and if you don't meet your terms and conditions of probation, the sentence at the end of it will be imposed. So she's facing up to 18 months in custody. A deferred or suspended sentence means you get an amount of time of probation with that 18 months suspended or some amount of time suspended, up to 18 months. And if you do not meet the terms of your probation, then you get your probation revoked and you serve your time. A conditional discharge allows that if you complete your probation period without any violations, then there is no criminal conviction entered on your record. So it suspends the entry of your conviction in addition to any suspended sentence. And again, when I went through the defense's recitation of this, it was unclear to me if this is something that was available after a jury conviction. Well, the prosecution starts their motion for sentencing with this. Quote, the state opposes defendant's request for conditional discharge. While it is true that Ms. Gutierrez is eligible for a conditional discharge, the state asserts that Ms. Gutierrez should not be granted a conditional discharge because upon her arrival in New Mexico, she swiftly committed a host of felonies and has another felony charge pending before Judge Ellington for intentionally hiding a firearm from security at a local bar to get the firearm into the bar. Look, firearms and alcohol don't go together, so don't do that. And that's what she was indicted for around the same time Baldwin was indicted on this second prosecution in the involuntary manslaughter. So A conditional discharge is possible. I don't think this judge is going to do that, but we'll see. The prosecution goes on to say, upon successfully circumventing the security at the bar, she went into the restroom and made a selfie video stating, quote, they checked my purse, but they didn't check my butt cheeks. Girl, I hope you're using a tushy if that's where you're hiding your weapon. Also, what are you doing? And for completeness, the end of that quote is wah, wah, wah. I don't exactly know what tone that was set in. It's just typed out W-A-H, W-H-A-H, W-A-H. So that's delightful. It goes on to say at the same time that she was speaking, she held up a nickel-plated semi-automatic pistol in front of the camera. There is additional evidence that has previously been presented to the court that Ms. Gutierrez was in possession of cocaine while in New Mexico and while working as the firearm experts on the set of Rust. It says the state also opposes a conditional discharge due to Gutierrez's complete and total failure to accept responsibility. At sentencing on Monday, the prosecution, I imagine, will talk about this a lot. They go on to say, as demonstrated by the summaries below of some of her calls since her incarceration on March 6, 2024, Gutierrez continues to deny responsibility and blames others. She goes so far as to blame the set medic, the paramedics who attempted to save Ms. Hutchins, and even blames the child actor on set for picking up a gun. Moreover, there are references to Gutierrez being in possession of alcohol during the time of the trial, which would violate her conditions of release. It goes on to say, stunningly, Ms. Gutierrez requested during her jail calls that her legal team request Ms. Hutchins' husband and son be contacted and asked to speak on her behalf at sentencing. She continued to complain in her jail calls about the negative effects this incident has had on her life and her modeling career, while never expressing genuine remorse at any time. She expressed a willingness to violate future court orders should she be subpoenaed for the Baldwin trial. She refers to the jurors. I'm going to go with two of the things she refers to the jurors as, because one is intensely offensive, but idiots and assholes, and another word showing that you do not believe that someone is intelligent, I guess we could say, but there's no need to highlight that. It goes on to say and suggested that her mother could confront undersigned counsel in the restroom because counsel uses the same restroom as the public. Look, as a former prosecutor, I am triggered. Have I ever been confronted in a public restroom? Yes. Does that create a very dangerous situation for all involved? Yes. Yes, it does. So you know that Carrie Morrissey's pissed by telling her mom, well, she has to go to the bathroom sometime. Why don't you just get in her face in the bathroom? That's not going to go well for anyone. Trust. And I imagine now that the bathroom will be cleared by sheriffs before the prosecutor uses the restroom, which is a waste of time and money for everybody, except if they are threatening the prosecutor, well, then what else is going to happen here? It goes on to say, finally, she requested that her employment history be misrepresented to undersigned counsel and the court so it would appear as though she was working full-time prior to trial. Surprisingly, Ms. Gutierrez doesn't seem to mind being in jail and at times appears to genuinely enjoy it. We're going to go through some of those things. The court also asks that the conviction be designated a serious violent offense. We will see what the court does with that. That is up to court discretion. I don't know if it is appropriate, and I don't know if I think that this should be designated a serious and violent offense. It is an invol, which means the law contemplates that this is a reckless accident, not a intentional or volitional crime in the way we see with other crimes. But the state is requesting that the conviction be designated a serious violent offense due to the extreme recklessness that Ms. Gutierrez demonstrated while working as the armorer, including bringing the live rounds onto set and failing to check them. The state goes on to request that Hannah Gutierrez be sentenced to 18 months in prison, that she be designated a serious violent offender due to her recklessness in the face of knowledge that her acts were reasonably likely to result in serious harm, and that if the court suspends or defers a sentence, meaning she gets to do probation with an amount of time that she would receive if she messes up on probation, that the court sentence her to 5 years probation with a suspended or deferred sentence. Generally, it would be the 18 months minus the time she's been in custody. suspended with 5 years of probation. And that would be a formal probation, not the unsupervised probation Dave Halls received. Let's look at some of these jail calls, shall we? First, quote, Hannah says that the other girls in jail were saying that, quote, I can't believe they threw your pretty little white ass in here for nothing, Hannah says. Quote, like, yeah, girl, for real. She says that so far she is built for jail and likes tap water. She likes hard beds and the cat food isn't too bad every day. The male on the phone says that when Hannah was taken away, that mom said, quote, this is some bullshit. Hannah laughs loudly. He tells her what mom did, and Hannah says that she was glad her mom stood up and said something. Hannah laughs about all of this. The male says he has been to jail before. She says she didn't think she would like it, but now she does. Hannah says that she can't believe that the judge put her in jail, talks about the jury and how they only took 2 fucking hours, that's a direct quote, and how she got the book thrown at her. Well, girl, you haven't been sentenced yet. She said that everyone lied on the stand except for 2 or 3 experts. She talks about the witnesses and how they all lied. She says that she doesn't need to be shaking the dummies all the time. Girl. Really? She complains about what happened on set and says people are still going to die on set. She complains about Gabby Pickle. She complains about how the jury and how people who got immunity and had pending lawsuits. She says she wishes TMZ would shut up and that, quote, literally she is fine. How does she know what TMZ is saying? She complains about the Washington Post and how if they talked to any worker in there, they would all say she's happy and bubbly. She talks about being a felon and how it's going to work with all of his guns and how she isn't sure how it'll work. She says that he, and again, they don't clarify who he is in this, maybe her father, can put them in a safe and can tell them she doesn't know the combo. So she's already planning to still continue to interact with weapons, even though she's going to be restricted from interacting with weapons. And these jail calls might be the thing that tips the judge over from probation. She talks about how she is wrongly incarcerated. After Hannah was taken into custody, Hayden, the other party on the call, goes to her hotel room to clean up. And Sean says, quote, where did this bottle of Crown Royal come from? Hayden claims it and says Sean wasn't thrilled. Hannah talks about playing games with the other inmates, says she is fine, talks about suing various media outlets. Good luck with that. Goes back to talking about TMZ and saying that she's built for jail. She says that if she's subpoenaed to the Baldwin trial, she will not show up. If you're in custody, they'll just bring you, by the way. Mom says that she was held in jail for 3 weeks for contempt. Hannah complains that she shouldn't be subpoenaed if Baldwin didn't show up for her. Did she expect him to? Did they subpoena him? She says that the judge is giving her time for no reason, the judge isn't fair, and that they are going to the Supreme Court. That Hannah doesn't understand why the judge locked her up when she had terms of release. That she is trying to get Carmela, Jason Bowles' paralegal, to talk to the family of Helena about coming to sentences to speak on her behalf. Hannah talks about the friends she's making and how she's having fun. She says that she doesn't want to go to prison for 13 months, but it is what it is. Hannah says jail isn't like summer camp, but it's kind of like summer camp. Hannah says that everything is going to get reviewed and that she feels like people were paid off to look the other way. Hannah goes into some sort of conspiracy theory about how she was used as a pawn and says jail's not too bad. And this, again, these are the prosecution's summaries of the calls. Hannah says that the judge is terrible and Carrie got together with the judge and they were against her. Hannah complains about how fast the jury deliberated, says that everyone who testified was given immunity, had a lawsuit pending, and was part of the problem. She calls the jury offensive things. Quote, when they say a jury of your peers, they mean fucking idiots, but stronger. Hannah calls Carrie a bitch and says she is doing this out of spite or doing it out of spite. Oh, Hannah, how original, calling the prosecutor names on your jail calls. So shocking. I think most prosecutors would probably be offended if they weren't called names at the end of a trial on the jail calls, because that's generally how that goes. I mean, maybe not all of them, but I think Carrie would kind of be offended. She'd be like, wait, you didn't name call me? Weird. Hannah thinks the judge is being paid off. The judge isn't going to like that at all, and thinks she deserves credit for being respectful. She's mad because she isn't going to get bail. Hannah says that she paid a guy named Roger $3,000 to be her PR person. How's that working? She says that Jason Bull needs to talk to Rogers to get everything out. Hannah and her mother joke about her mom getting thrown out of court and that the judge is a menace. Hannah thanks her mom for the outburst. Hannah was thinking that mom was going to be behind her getting booked into jail. So Hannah thought they were going to arrest her mother and also throw her into jail. Good. Hannah says the judge was on a power trip. Mom wants to picket the court. Hannah wants to pull in the governor and, quote, fuck this bitch up. The prosecution says it's hard to know who she is referring to as the bitch. Well, my guess would be either the prosecutor or the judge. Hannah's mother tells her she needs to write a book about the whole thing before somebody else does. Hannah says she's already been punished for this. Carmela says she knows that Hannah is sorry. Carmela says Carrie is lying about everything. It's not helpful when the paralegal's feeding into the defendant's thoughts that aren't all grounded in fact. They blame the child on set for being dangerous on set. Hannah talks about the kid getting the gun that was, quote, just lying on the ground. Girl, you're the armorer. Carmela tells Hannah, quote, I don't trust Carrie to not be recording these calls. I don't trust that bitch. Jail calls are recorded. And if it's not with the lawyer as a lawyer call, yeah, they're recorded. There are then multiple conversations where Hannah's talking about her father's leukemia and using that to keep her out of prison and say that she is their caregiver. Quote, they want to say that her and her mom are the only people who can come and help. Hannah talks about her publicist and how it is time to make some statement from him. Hannah talks about her statement to the judge. Her mom talks about the saying something to the judge, and Carmela apparently told her she can say whatever she wants at sentencing, and the worst that can happen is spending a couple days in jail. I mean, if by a couple days you mean 18 months. Hannah asked Carmela, the paralegal, to reach out to Helena's husband and son to support her at sentencing. Hannah says that the jury didn't look at the evidence and are assholes. Hannah says the people that testified against her just want to talk shit and she got railroaded, that Carrie lied in her closing statement. Hannah wants to go after people for libel. Look, if Carrie lied in her closing statement, there would be motions to the court. There aren't. Hannah's mad the whole thing got pinned on her. I mean, fair. Hannah says the jail is good for character development. Hannah wants them to put Alec Baldwin in jail also. Hannah says the jury was so fucking stupid that they couldn't tell what was happening. And she again calls the jury fucking idiots. Hannah says she doesn't feel like she deserves to be here, and the jail guards agree with her. Hannah thinks the judge got paid off. They talk about how she shouldn't be a felon, and maybe they can get it knocked down to a misdemeanor. That ship has sailed. Hannah wants to bother the governor for the rest of her life so she can be pardoned. Hannah doesn't feel like she should be a felon because she has never been arrested. I mean, that's not the standard. Hannah says the judge wanted to lock her up. Hannah and her mother talk about how the system failed her. I mean, let's talk about the movie and who failed you at the movie set. Hannah's mother suggests that Hannah should fight the biggest girl of the bunch that is causing problems. Mom says that she can't promise she will be calm and cool at sentencing. Mom says she is going to go in disguise if they don't let her in. Mom says it's lucky that all she did at the verdict was yell. The court's not going to love that. We'll see if mom is allowed in the court or not. Hannah says she got moved to 300 and it's, quote, fucking lit in here now. Hannah complains about the jail guards. Hannah was accused of passing notes to some male inmate and sparked some sort of investigation. But Hannah says she has Regina as a roommate and it is fun as fuck and not bad at all. Are they like living out their little mean girls fantasy in court? Like, is Regina George your custody bestie? I have questions. Hannah says that she had a good day and fun with another inmate. Hannah says it is, quote, crazy good vibes today and everyone was having fun because they got their commissary. Hannah talks about some new medication that she got that made her loopy, talks about working out and says she likes her new medication because it makes her feel high. Hannah complains that she has all of the fame of a public figure, but none of the benefits. Hannah says that this is all she is going to be known for. Mom asks whether or not Hannah's friends and family are going to write letters for her. Hannah says she is nice and safe in jail. Hannah thinks the producers should be in jail and complains about Dave Halls and how he fucked Hannah to save his own ass. Look, of all of the jail calls, I want more about what she thinks of Dave Halls. Real, real curious. The next summary says Hannah is dismissive of the judge talking about someone dying as a result of her action. Hannah says the prosecution bored the jury for 9 days, and when the defense put their case, the jury was bored. They think the jury must have been tampered with. They feel let down by the FBI. Hannah says if the whole thing wasn't so comical, she'd be upset. Mom yells that Hannah didn't cause Helena's death, and Hannah agrees. We are not dealing with reality on these jail calls. I don't think Hannah's the only one, but Hannah's one of the people, which seems to be missed in this conversation. Hannah and her boyfriend talk about Hannah drinking and how she is mean to him when she drinks. based on the timeline of their relationship, she had to have violated conditions because there is another call where they talk about it being their 6-month anniversary. Hannah says she deserves a new trial and this is all bullshit. Hannah talks about her job at Mattress World and how she doesn't want her job back, but maybe because she will need a new job. Hannah also wants to get on unemployment. She thinks that losing her job due to incarceration is the best way to get unemployment. Hannah says she should have signed the plea and then just gone on the news and denied it. I guess she's regretting not taking that plea deal. Hannah says she's looking at 13 months, which is ridiculous over what happened. Hannah thinks the paramedics should be in jail for intubating the victim, Helena Hutchins, wrong. Hannah says her mom can give Carrie 2 or 3 of her pay stubs to, quote, shut that bitch up. Hannah tells mom to get the ones that she has 38 or 40 hours on it so it shows that she has a full-time job and not the ones that show she has less. And she can't believe how many people are trying to ruin her. She says the medic on the set of Rust is a dumb bitch and should have been prepared. After seeing that testimony, this doesn't sit well with me. They talk about the paramedics taking too long, and she would still be here today if they had done it right and not intubated her right. I don't know if that's a misstatement or a mistype. She calls the paramedics fucking idiots and something more offensive. And then her mom says, how is any of that on you? Her mom wonders if Carrie is going to be at sentencing. I can answer that for you. Yes. Yes, she will be. And she's going to have a lot to say about these jail calls. Mom says, she don't want to see me. Mom says, don't need that bitch there. Hannah tells her that they all use the same bathroom as the public and chuckles. I imagine that we're going to see a lot of security at sentencing. I imagine that the judge and the court staff will be notified about these conversations. I can see the court choosing to keep Hannah Gutierrez's mother out of the courtroom, but this sentencing is going to be at 11 a.m. Central on Monday, and we'll see what happens. So even though it's a bit of a longer one, we needed to catch up on what is happening in this sentencing. I have a feeling this sentencing is going to be a little bit spicy. And with that, this is the Quick Bits. Thank you for being a Law Nerd. Go download the Law Nerd app and I will see you, well, in court this week. Bye. You can stay up to date with everything I'm covering on our free iOS and Android app at lawnerdapp.com or search your app store for Law Nerd. And you can also follow me on social media at The Emily D. Baker. Remember, I stream on YouTube on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I recap all of that for you in Quick Bits on Monday. And of course, The Emily Show drops on Wednesdays. Thanks for being a Law Nerd.